Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
Dun, 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 dun.
True Detective. is that sort of detective, sort of sleuthy sort of music? Is that what you're going for?
I think that was a Law and Order theme.
Oh.
But any...
Isn't that... Wait. No. Oh, reel it back in. Isn't the Law and Order theme... Doo doo.
Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, and there's some music too, is there?
Doo doo.
I love that. It's the best thing they did on Law and Order. Was that.
The point is, we're talking True Detective, and any great detective show needs a classic detective theme.
Does this one have one?
I kind of like the opening to this, but it's not really catchy. It's not really like catchy detective music. It's not like Law and Order or The Bill. It's just some kind of like country-ish.
Or Bored to Desk.
Yeah, Bored to Desk. Bored to Desk, great tune.
Yeah, I thought it was a good theme to True Detective, but nothing I'm writing home about.
Mm. Do you often write home about detective themes?
If it's a good one, I will.
Dear Mum, there is this new show called Bored to Death. I really enjoy the opening theme music. I highly recommend it.
Killer theme. It excites me, the idea of a detective story, because I always, as a kid, thought it'd be pretty cool to set up my own private detective agency. Actually, it's an idea I've been toying about the last couple of years. It could be something good to make a bit of money on the weekends, like just a weekend detective agency.
There was this series of books that I really liked about a kid detective, and I can't remember the name of it now. And I always remember that one of the crimes that he solved, he figured out that some letter or note was fake because it was dated June 31st. And there is no June 31st. June only goes to 30.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, oh, my birthday's in June. I should have got that one.
Yeah. Think if your birthday's in July, you'd be more likely to get it because you're probably counting down those June days. Until
I don't care after
that. Yeah, yes. So I always wanted to, like, and I feel like, is this something I could still do? Like, I feel like I'm pretty good at noticing clues and solving mysteries. I remember back in high school, I was, running a CSI club.
Well,
cause I liked the show CSI. I loved on a Wednesday after it aired on the night before. Going around the water cooler at school and talking up the CSI episode and the mystery that was solved. And one of my friends one day said, if you like CSI so much, why don't you start up your own club? I was like, I am, you're the founder. So
I love any sarcastic recommendation that's taken entirely seriously.
Yeah. There were newsletters the next day with this guy's name on them being circulated throughout the year group. So I had a special file where, like, the originals were kept and things like that in my locker. One day, it went missing. Someone stole the CSI newsletters.
That's the wrong person to steal newsletters from.
I know. So all of a sudden, I had to solve my own crime scene investigation.
The case files became the case.
Yes. So I spoke to anyone who was in the club. I thought it has to be an inside job. See, like, the people in the club were more annoyed about being in the club than anything, clearly. So I remember there's a CSI episode where you had to look at the way people were looking. If you were talking to them, they looked to the left, they were lying. If they looked to the right, they're telling the truth. Can't remember if that's the right order, but I did at the time. And I read it. I searched a couple of people's lockers when they were going to get books out. I was like, put my hand in and had a bit of a ruffle around. So eliminate a few suspects that way. Eliminate a few just with a fierce interrogation. Figured out it was Alex. Went to his locker. Staked it out for him to go to his locker. Ran up, opened it, found the folder full of files. We got them back. And then the next newsletter was a big bumper issue about how the case was solved.
I guess this isn't a closed case because you just named and shamed Alex on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, Alex, you shouldn't have messed with the president of the CSI club. Anyway, that case was solved, but I do have another case that is unsolved that maybe we could solve a little later in this podcast.
Ooh, I like it.
It's from the 90s, never solved. No one has ever gotten to the bottom of this case.
I'd like to see that solved on the podcast.
It would be good. It would be very good. So we'll try to get onto some people and things. But first, let's talk about True Detective. That's what we're here for. That's what everyone's listening for.
We're going to start off with a spoiler-free segment. So whether you have or haven't seen the show, we're going to talk generally about the show, premise and what some of the things that we liked and we didn't like.
Mm.
And we won't spoil anything, then we'll give our verdict. And then in the second half of the podcast, where this is going to be spoiler-free for all.
Yeah.
And if you haven't watched it and don't want to spoil it, at that point you can turn off. Everyone else...
We will let you know when that's happening.
Oh,
we'll
yeah.
make very clear.
Yeah, we're well known for our spoiler alerts.
Yes, I think no one can accuse us of spoiling anything.
Well, I was interested in True Detective because it's a detective show on HBO. And The Wire, my favourite TV show of all time, was a detective show on HBO.
Hmm.
It's a good start.
Yes.
And in the lead roles on the show, you have Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Some pretty big names to be watching on TV.
Hmm.
That's just how far TV has come.
Yeah.
We were talking in our Oscars podcast about how the buzz around the show was perhaps spurring McConaughey on towards an Oscar.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, he won.
Yes, he did.
So... this TV stigma is well and truly gone.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of either of these film slash TV stars?
Well, you know I'm a big fan of Cheers. I love Cheers. Where I think... is that sort of where Woody got his start?
I think so.
Yeah. So, look, he wasn't my favourite on Cheers. He was no Cliff Clavin or Sam Malone or Norm. But he was pretty funny on that. He was pretty good. So, yeah, I'm a bit of a fan of Woody. And... Matthew McConaughey, not really. Like, he was good in Dallas Buyers Club, but I didn't even love him in that, and all his other movies are pretty rubbish.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed Woody Harrelson. I think he's a good dramatic actor, and he can also be quite funny in things like Zombieland.
Oh, yeah.
Chasing those Twinkies. And Matthew McConaughey, I always thought he was all right. Never loved any of his movies. Dallas Buyers Club... for me, it wasn't the runaway performance of the year, but I can see why he won the Oscar. I thought it was a very good performance, so I was pretty interested to see what he would do on True Detective.
It's interesting, because Matthew McConaughey, when he won his Oscar, got into the God stuff pretty big time. He gave God top billing. God got the number one, thanks. Fair enough, I might do the same. But
I feel a little hard done by.
Sorry, buddy. But his character in this, not a big fan of God.
Mm.
He's always saying these idiots with their religion and things, so...
not much point to anything.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying you have to play someone who shares similar views to you, but it's quite interesting, like, hot off the heels on hearing that Oscar speech watching this series where he plays a very devout atheist.
Mm. So I guess the premise of the show is that... there was a case in 1995.
Yeah.
Where a girl is found murdered.
Yeah, it's a murder case. This isn't just a petty theft detective case, this series. It's murder.
Stakes almost as high as the CSI club.
Yeah. Newsletter heist.
Caught back in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And a woman has been murdered, and it's a sort of a... ritualistic,
no clothes, sort of in a ball almost, hunched over deer antlers, under a tree.
Reminded me of the tableau murder scenes from Dexter.
Mm.
Put on the case is Woody Harrelson, who plays Marty, someone, and Matthew McConaughey, who plays Rust Cole.
Marty and Cole. are on the case.
And Marty, he's kind of been around this area quite a long time. He's kind of more like the senior detective.
Mm.
He's a little bit more sort of by-the-book kind of guy. Mm. And Cole's kind of the new hotshot on the scene. He's a little aloof. He seems a little arrogant, but he's very smart.
The Tax Man.
The Tax Man.
Because he carries around a book.
A book that's too big. A book so big, only a tax man would carry it around.
Yeah.
And so, parallel to this storyline, in the present, so we see them around nearly 20 years in the future, they are getting interviewed about what happened back then.
Yes.
So you think, oh, something's going to have happened recently that's going to tie back into this old case. And you're going to try and piece all these parts together.
It sort of made me think they probably didn't solve the case back in 1995.
You got new evidence. Yeah. We're going to bring the old team, get the band back together. Yeah.
So I always knew with the flashbacks, we weren't going to, like, wrap everything up. But it was also interesting with the flashbacks. I didn't know for a bit whether what we were seeing was what they were telling the people interviewing them or just what happened.
I think it was what happened.
Yes, definitely what happened.
They would tell the interviewers what was happening, but then what we would see on screen was completely different to what they were saying.
That's when I realised it was not what we were seeing.
So I liked that. I thought that worked pretty well on the show. So that's kind of the setup of the show.
Mm-hmm.
What were some aspects of the show, maybe the show's style or some characters and things that we... Let's start with the light. What were some things that we liked about the show?
Well, it's sort of got this nice Louisiana sort of feel to it sort of thing. Like,
if it had like an Idaho feel, that would be terrible.
What is like,
Louisiana, great feel. It's Idaho, not so much.
It's a nice environment. It's sort of, you sort of get in that sort of space and looks like rife for a mystery. I don't know.
I will agree that the cinematography and the shots of the landscapes and things were quite nice. I thought it was quite cinematic for a television series.
Yeah, like the bayou and the trees and the fields. It was pretty good.
I would say the show is quite thematically rich, philosophically rich. They like delving into just tangents of theories and thoughts and opinions, philosophies on life. And I think this can be perhaps like a little bit self-indulgent, self-serving sometimes in TV shows and movies, but I thought the writing here was really, really strong. I found those musings, particularly by McConaughey's character, very interesting to listen to. I could hear him, even when he thought he was starting to go a bit to the crazy side, I could listen to him ramble for a long time.
Okay.
In fact, there were points watching the show where I just got kind of jealous. I was just thinking, man, the writing on this show is just so... Like, I don't think I could write like this. Like, I want to write. But in terms of just this gritty tone and the approach to not just the being a detective, but to these life troubles, I thought were really thought-provoking, but also entertaining. You know, you had some kind of snazzy lines as well. Maybe very jealous.
Yeah. Maybe if you worked a bit harder. Like, maybe you get there. So...
They need a bit more life experience. Need to be upset by some more dead bodies to get that kind of view on the world.
I think the writing and that sort of philosophical sort of stuff sometimes worked for me and sometimes didn't. I think there were times when I was really digging it and other times when I thought it was trying a bit too hard.
It definitely did try. So for some people it might not land. I think for me it did.
Yeah. There's some really good lines that I wish I'd written down.
So there are some great lines I could quote, but that's not my job as a podcaster to remember these and share these on the show.
I can't help but feel I need a notepad when I'm watching shows. I feel like I'm not bringing as much as I could to the podcast. I was True Detective like a week ago. Like, this is a bit of a show that I watched... I sort of knew I should watch it for the podcast and stuff. I sort of was sort of busy-ish, not really wanting to binge on it like House of Cards. And I sort of thought, you know what I'll do? I'll get an episode up, put it on my computer, and then just, like, put it next to the bed as I'm going to bed. And I'm going to go to bed while watching True Detective. So then I sort of fell asleep about halfway through each episode. So I had to catch up the next day on the rest of the episode.
I am so horribly OCD when it comes to that. My girlfriend Bonnie is like, oh, maybe we can just put on a movie and, you know, if we fall asleep, yeah, it's alright. It'll be nice just to fall asleep to the movie. And I'd be like, but no, then we won't know what happens. We'll have to wait until tomorrow.
But you'll be asleep while you're waiting.
I'll miss stuff while I'm getting sleepy. And we won't know how back to start the movie again from.
Just figure it out.
Oh, I need to watch some of your things in their entirety.
So, True Detective, good show to put you to sleep. It does have a very meandering sort of tone, doesn't it? It's a slow burn, The True Detective.
I don't know. Sometimes I say, oh, this show took a few episodes, but yeah, around 4 or 5, I was hooked. I reckon this show had me hooked by probably episode 2.
Okay.
I was surprised at what they could fit into some episodes.
Hmm.
Like, some episodes I was like, wow, it must be getting to the end, so much has happened, and there'll be 20 minutes to go. And then they'd have a whole other bunch of crazy stuff happen.
Hmm.
I don't think it kept up that pace the entire season, but there were certainly some episodes I was like, they kept up an impressive pace.
Yeah.
So that's a bit about the style of the show. There are some other characters, but McConaughey and Harrelson are pretty strong leads in the show. Actually, the relationship between them is actually a central part of the... as much as the mystery, I would say.
Yes.
So we talked about whether we like them in general. What did you think of them in the show?
I thought they were very strong. Like, I thought they were really captivating and stuff, and I think where I had issues with the show is more maybe with the writing or the pacing or the directing. It wasn't with them. I think they were both really good. However, they were sometimes a bit hard to understand. Like, you could not make out the last couple of lines of the whole series.
Is that just authenticity, though, Matt? The Louisiana drawl?
Yeah, so if it's a not important line that they don't mind you not catching, that's fine. But on Survivor, when people are mumbling, they put, like, little subtitles at the bottom so you can know what they're saying, because it's got some relevance to the plot.
Is that a technique that can, you know, be used on both reality and scripted TV?
If I was directing True Detective, I would have, rather than going for the Survivor approach, have gone for the say that a little clearer.
Not the, sorry, subtitles, not okay.
No. I think unless it's
imagine a foreign just language. The whole season of True Detective, no subtitles. And then at the end, the drawl is just a little bit hard to understand. So the final lines of the series.
Because the reason they do that for Survivor is because it's reality. Like, they don't go, okay, take that again. We didn't quite get that. Whereas with Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey, you can ask them to say it again, I think.
HBO has been quite successful. I think they have the budget to do more than one take.
Yes. Yeah, their other shows are very easy to understand.
Woody's like, I am a film star. That's going to cost you another $50,000.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I thought Woody Harrelson was great. He did just what I expected. You know, there might have been some things I didn't love, but that was part of his character.
Yes. The performance. Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that.
I thought Matthew McConaughey was a revelation. You know, if you thought, you know, Dallas Buyers Club was his coming out as I'm a serious, dramatic, talented actor. Not a coming out. Yeah,
it's coming out.
This just blows that out of the water.
Mm.
I thought this performance was 10 times better than Dallas Buyers Club.
I thought it was better than Dallas Buyers Club.
I find him riveting.
He's good.
He's an intriguing, enigmatic, thought-provoking, entertaining character.
Mm.
I think he's as good a lead as you could have for your detective series.
Yeah. I'm not quite as passionate about the performance as you are, but I agree it's very good and better than he was in Dallas Buyers. So let's give this a verdict, because people might want to know whether this is worth checking out. And obviously you want to know that before you hear the spoilers.
Yeah, we're going to wrap up the spoiler-free section with our verdict.
If we give it a low score, there's more chance that people are going to go, oh, not worth my time, let's just listen to the whole Screen Verdict podcast now.
Or are they just going to not watch the show and then not come back for the spoiler section?
I think they'll want to hear my mystery and they're pretty keen to hear our thoughts on the spoilers, regardless of whether they're going to watch the show or not.
In that case, we'll just give it a fair score.
Okay.
I really enjoyed True Detective. I thought... got me hooked pretty early. I thought it kept the pace up. A lot was happening. These great characters. Lots of intrigue and mystery.
Mm.
Something interesting happened at the end of every episode. I was always thinking, oh, just one more. Just one more. Just got to watch another episode. And then you get some pretty great action around the middle of the season. There's only 8 episodes. And then I think around episode 6, it sort of slowed a little bit. There's a little bit of relationship-y stuff. Just kind of slowed the show down. And then the ending, I think, was solid and it was satisfying, but it didn't quite live up to the potential that the show set for itself. I think around episode 5, I was like, oh man, this might be one of my favourite seasons of anything ever. And then by the end, I was like, yeah, that was really good. I really enjoyed that.
Mm.
So yeah, I definitely recommend this, unless you're maybe afraid of scary things, because it gets a little dark, a little gritty.
Mm.
Rather than that, I think pretty much everyone should watch it. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Okay. I thought there's some really great things about this show. It had a great style and tone, great performances, a somewhat intriguing mystery to follow along. But it was pretty long. And there weren't heaps of clues and stuff. It wasn't the best detective sort of story. There wasn't really a big... I feel like at the end, there wasn't, the big twist I was hoping that there'd be. I thought they wrapped up things okay. It was a good ending, not a great ending. Yeah, it was solid. It was okay, but it wasn't great. I'll give it a 7 out of 10. So, before we get to the spoilers, I'll give you the premise for my unsolved case. Right? Be a little tidbit for those who want to go and watch True Detective and send them to come back and listen to the rest when they're disappointed by True Detective. So,
compare the mysteries.
So, one day we came back from, I think, morning tea.
Who's we?
Our class.
Okay.
In primary school.
Primary school.
Or elementary school for the stateside listeners. We come back. Seems like a fun day. Everyone's having a good time. Everyone, perfect day. The teacher then comes in. And he gets all to sit down, and he looks pretty serious. And he says, guys, in my briefcase, I had 3 biscuits at the beginning of the day. I was saving them for lunch. I was really looking forward to those biscuits. They were my treat. Who stole the biscuits? No one owned up. So he never got anyone in trouble because no one said they'd done it.
Everyone stayed strong.
Yeah.
So no one cracked later on.
Yeah.
He didn't keep the heat up enough to break the case.
But I didn't want to leave it just at that because I didn't care about someone getting in trouble. I could care less. But I was really curious as to who stole the business. So I talked to pretty much everyone in the class at lunch that day. No one cracked for me either, even though I promised I wasn't going to tell anyone. And I think the guy sat next to me, Lewis, was sort of maybe my partner in sort of trying to solve it, and he was very frustrated we couldn't find it out. So, yeah, that's the case. It's been
you
to this
Lewis
day unsolved.
And your teacher never got any closure.
No.
Here's what I like about this case. The biscuits were inside a briefcase.
Yeah.
It's not like an open cookie jar.
Yeah.
Where people know that there are cookies.
I know.
There's the inside knowledge. How did they know that there were cookies inside the briefcase?
Yeah. Yes.
And also, how did they get in the briefcase?
Yeah.
To steal the cookies.
I actually think a plausible theory is maybe the teacher left them at home. Don't you think that's plausible?
Imagine you file a missing persons report. You're like, my daughter's missing.
Yeah.
And the detectives look into it. And it's like, as far as we can tell, you don't have a daughter. That's right. That's why she never came home. I never had a daughter.
Oh, man. That's sad. That's
that's almost worse.
Yeah.
Than the missing daughter.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Is that...
I'm not sure if that applies to having kids.
Yeah. Anyway, these are cookies, not kids. Here's the problem. I don't even know how to clear myself.
You're a suspect.
Well, I am. I was at the school that day. I was in the room.
Wouldn't that be a twist?
Yeah. But can I say I did not steal them? I don't know how to prove that I didn't. It's very hard to go that far back to prove something.
Hmm. That's what makes this such a juicy case. Yes.
So I really need to find out who did it to clear my own name as well.
The stakes are just getting higher and higher.
I know. It's mental. So, should we get to the spoilers before we start to look into this case a bit more?
Okay.
Talk a bit more about True Detective.
So, Zen.
Well, I might just go, like, I'll just while we're talking about stuff, I might just text some people that were in that class and just try to get some phone numbers or some, just something, that some leads that we could possibly go on. So, sorry if I'm a bit distracted, but I will be Facebooking and see who's online. Oh, Michael is online. He was in that class. Oh, he just got offline. Oh, no. Just in time. So I'll keep an eye on.
That's suspicious to me.
Yeah.
We look. We as soon as we try to make contact, he disappears.
Yeah.
Clue number one. Mm. Okay, so as we said, we're now going to be entering the spoiler section.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert! Woo! That was not police sirens. Now, hopefully there will be police sirens soon.
You stole those cookies. Get worried.
That was the spoiler warning. So, True Detective. I guess it's a whodunit. It's a mystery. Yes. You start off with this murder. Or this body. We want to know who did it.
Yes.
So, who did do it was Reggie Ledoux. Reggie Ledoux did do it.
It was the gardener.
Well, okay. There's
oh, no, sorry. Sorry. That's not the name of the gardener.
Well, you're right. I guess there's a who did it part one and there's a who did it part two. Because there's who they thought did it. And I guess they were involved. So what happens is they research and they find, because Cole, he's sure that there's going to be others. He thinks this is a serial killer.
Yes.
And he finds another body with sort of crude little marking, and it's like an amateur version of this murder. And they tracked down a person from this girl's family and found out she dated this guy. And then he apparently went to jail with the ex-husband of the girl that had been murdered this time. So there's all these connections. And it turns out that he was making drugs for a bunch of bikers. And so through the bikers, which is a pretty cool episode, I thought.
That was sort of fun.
Where Cole goes undercover, tries to go to these bikers, you know, because he knew them when he was working undercover as a part of the drug police, whatever that thing's called, the narcos, spent some time in Mexico. We want to trade meth for coke.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you know, if you do this robbery with me, I'll know that you're for real. I can trust you.
Mm.
And so they go into this place to steal a drug stash. And that's a tense episode. That was really exciting.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes wrong. But they get this guy and they get on through talking to whoever organizes that sort of stuff within the bikers. They find the maker of the meth, which is Reggie Ledoux.
Yes.
But rather than just arresting him, Marty kills him.
Oh, yes.
Because he finds those kids and he's just like, oh, this is so disgusting. This guy's the worst dude in the world. He's talking about black stars and stuff. Shut up, man. Just blows him away. So I thought that was pretty cool. That was pretty unexpected. It sort of blows the case because now they can't arrest him and stuff. And you're not really supposed to just shoot people. So then you have the thing of them telling the fake story.
Yes.
And that was kind of cool how it's like, oh, we're under fire. And you can see them just kind of sneaking up to the thing. It's like, it was chaos, man.
Yeah.
And they're just walking. And then they've got to make the scene look like the way they told it.
Yeah.
Because that's part of, I guess, the intrigue of the show. These are flawed characters. And you think that they're doing something noble, trying to track down these people, but things go wrong and they kind of have to lie and twist things in order to cover themselves in the way that they solve the case.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of interesting when he kind of thought that he's kind of like, well, that might not have been the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Cole might be a bit mad here. Cole's kind of been obsessed with solving this case. But Cole wasn't mad at him. Mm. He just said, that was justice. Reggie Ledoux deserved to die.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see you finally commit to something.
Yes.
I thought that was a good line. So that was Whodunit Part 1. That was when they became heroes. Everyone thought that they'd solved the case.
I didn't think they had. I thought there was something bigger going on here.
Well, quite a few years later, another girl shows up who has been murdered in a similar fashion.
Wasn't Reggie Ledoux, can tell you that.
Not Reggie Ledoux.
He's dead.
Now, the cops' theories, the new cops, actually suspect Cole. Because they think Cole, he's this weird guy. You know, he came out of nowhere. A couple months after he arrives, they catch this incredible case.
Yeah.
He pushes everything to solve it. He bends all the rules and stuff to solve the case. He was directing where the case would go. He solves it.
Mm.
Then they never catch anything like that again.
Yeah.
Until he shows up back in town when there's another crime scene.
Oh, no.
So they suspect him. At which point, I was thinking, I don't really want this to be the outcome of the show, but the fact that they're putting it out there, that this guy that you've been supporting the whole time could have been behind it all, was kind of an interesting layer to the show.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? Like, if it was him, they probably wouldn't have telegraphed it that early, right? It probably would have been, like, second last slash final episode revelation.
Mm. Yeah, I think that was just after halfway through the season.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I feel like it's probably not him because they've turned the headlights on him a bit too quickly.
I think the purpose of that was not so much for us, the audience, to be tricked. It was more just another hurdle for Cole to have to overcome.
Yes.
So I guess this could have been like a copycat sort of thing, or maybe someone else was involved. I guess when Cole starts to believe that, you know, that he didn't get them, either he got the wrong person, or he just didn't get everyone. Because I think Reggie Ledoux was definitely involved.
Yes.
He's just interviewing someone on a completely unrelated case, and he gets him to confess. He's pretty good in the interview room. The guy's like, oh, no, man, well, if I tell you stuff, will you get me a deal? And he's like, you don't know anything. And he's like, oh, I know about this, about important people. He's like, you don't know anything about important people. It's like, oh, well, that case you solved, you didn't get him. It was this guy, and he's... So Cole's getting a bit heated because, you know, this is obviously an important case to him. He doesn't want to be told that he did something wrong. And then the guy goes, you don't know who is the Yellow King.
Yeah.
And this was a phrase we'd seen written down by the girl that was murdered. Mm. So he flips out. Mm. And then this guy ends up killing himself. They go to the call, the place where he got a call just before that. It's like a trashed public telephone box. Okay. The case is open. Something fishy's going on here.
Yes.
Did this get you hooked back into the thing? Weren't you loving the show at this point?
I was like, okay, good. I'm glad it's taking some turns and twists and stuff starting to happen. I'm enjoying this. But I was waiting for the payoff.
Well, it starts to expand. He thinks, you know, high up people are involved, like the governor, the Tuttles. The show kind of focuses on religion a lot as well, because there's the philosophical meanderings, and then there's also these series of church schools that have been set up, which Cole thinks is both connected to the governor and both connected to the murders, where these kids are being stolen from.
Yeah, and there's this guy that sort of runs all the church schools that comes in episode one or two and tries to sort of take over the case almost.
Mm.
And here's a tip for people watching detective shows or detective movies or whatever. The person who's involved or did it, right? The person who is the murderer, they'll usually be introduced early in the series in a sort of side-ish role, okay? Because they want the moment where at the end you go, oh, it was that person, like, right? So
I don't remember what it was, but I remember being very critical on a podcast where I was like, are you serious? Oh, it was the guy from the start.
Yeah. Yeah, so when, like, and I was trying to in the beginning, like, how does this go? So, who's the character that no one's really accusing of anything, but also could have maybe been the murderer? So there's no, like, information now to link them at all. And that religious leader sort of guy who came in with the special investigators is the only one. Like, I'm like, it's not really the boss of Woody Harrelson and they're like, he's just a desk guy. It's not going to go that way. So he was sort of the only one that in my head I had sort of, well, maybe they'll come back to him. Or they can make it one of the main characters. Like, they can make it, it's Woody Harrelson or it's Matthew McConaughey. Like, that's a route they could go. But I thought if they don't go that route, it's going to be just some little side character that we introduce to in passing. And then at the end it's like, oh my gosh. And he was the only one I could think of.
Well, I guess there's sort of two people involved in a way.
Yes.
There's the high-up person, which is like the governor, the Tuttles. I guess there was two Tuttles.
Yes.
And then the tall man with the scars on his face.
Yeah.
So I guess they confirm that this person exists because he goes to visit the girl that got rescued from Reggie Ledoux's place. And she mentions the person with the scars on his face, which they had heard when he went to that church camp, but they were never able to tie that to anything.
Mm.
And then they find that old black lady who I think might have been a housekeeper for the Tuttles, and she said that there was a kid with scars on his face.
Mm.
So now those two are connected, and they find the old old lady who had her house painted.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a little bit random.
Mm.
I can't remember exactly how he found that. Marty was just like, oh, here are some files from 95.
He's good, Marty.
Here's a picture of a house that had been painted.
Yeah, he remembers stuff.
Hmm, maybe. I thought they could have just made that a little bit clearer as how he put that together. But anyway, he finds that lady, and they're able to find out who painted the house.
Hmm.
And it's this... I can't remember what his last name is.
The gardener.
Yeah, it's basically, it's the gardener.
And he was, like, we did meet him a bit earlier in the series, didn't we? He's in one of the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, I think around episode 3, when they go to an old Light of the Way church school, because this is where one of the girls that had been found dead had gone to, there's a guy just mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, do you know anything about this place? He's like, oh, it's been closed for... I'm like, oh, do you know... Who can I speak to? And they're like, oh, I was just hired by this guy.
Mm.
It was him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they did introduce him fairly early into the series.
Yeah, mowing. So my detective theory was spot on, 100% side character they introduce, then they bring him back at the end. I was wrong in missing it. And I couldn't believe when it was the gardener that I did not have him on my short list of suspects. And when it was revealed to him, like, oh, it's the gardener from episode 3. Oh, no. How did I not, like, have him marked?
I thought it was so funny when the new cops are driving all around. I think this is at the end of episode 7.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find somewhere, and they pull over, and the gardener's there, and they ask him for some directions. And you can see that he's a bit weird, and he's trying to tell them stuff about himself. But after they've given them the directions, they don't care. And he's like, my family... Yeah, whatever. And they just drive off.
Yeah.
And he's like, my family has been here a long time.
Yeah. It's almost like...
He's just mowing in circles.
It's almost like when Deborah was trying to tell Batista that the next door was a murderer. Like, okay, go home, Deborah. I don't want to hear from you.
So they piece this together and they go to the place and the guy's so weird, man. I mean, you were expecting him to be weird, but in his home he speaks in an English accent or something.
Mm.
And then he's got this deranged half-sister or something that he's having sex with.
Mm.
Like making flowers is what they call having sex.
Yeah, and he's got like a dead dad in it, like a room he's chained talking up. So anyway, they rock up and they chase him pretty much. And he's got this pretty awesome labyrinth maze. Yeah. Like, that was pretty cool.
That was very tense.
I thought Matthew, or what's his name? Close? Cole? Rust?
Rust Cone.
I think the tax man shouldn't have run into the maze. Shouldn't he? Like, what? Like, there's, like, some helicopter or something at the end of the maze that the guy's going to fly off in? Like, surely he'll have to come out of there at some point. Like, they know who it is now. Like, surely he needs to wait for backup before going in that.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he could somehow get out of it. Just be... He comes out somewhere and lose him.
I guess. But it just does seem like... It's surprising he didn't get killed earlier. You just go down one of those corridors, turn a corner, the guy could have just been standing there with an axe. Yeah. Just, like, cut him in half.
Yeah. I was thinking I would be very nervous doing that. I would just be expecting, like, a bullet in the face or a knife in the face just every time I turned a dark corner.
Yeah.
But he's a renegade.
Yeah.
I don't think he's really afraid to die.
He's not as careful as we would be. Maybe that should be if there was a show about us careful detectives.
It's like, we gotta go now. It's like, no, I think we should call for backup.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the smart move here.
Yeah.
The next 5 minutes of the show is just us waiting for reinforcements. Team players.
Yeah.
So Marty comes in. They're having a pretty brutal fight. That was kind of crazy when, by the time he finds Errol and Gardner, he's lifted him up into the air by the knife, which is in his stomach.
Yeah.
That didn't look good. That looked like it would hurt.
I thought he had died. But not, like, completely died, but I thought he was pretty, pretty dead.
And then, I guess you had this ending, which was sort of kind of a bit predictable. It's like, oh, just before it looks like he's going to get him, he gets killed. But it was a bit of a twist, because you thought Marty was going to come in and save Cole, but then Marty gets attacked, and then Cole saves Marty. And just the shot, the visual of his, just like the front of his side of his head, just go, just spraying out.
Yeah.
As he got shot in the head, was pretty gnarly. It was a pretty good end to the scene.
And then they recover in hospital, and they're friends again.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I just feel with this ending, it would have had more impact if one or two of the detectives had died. I don't know. I just feel like there needs to be some big water cooler, shocking, you know, moment to end it all. And I just didn't get that.
I don't know. I don't know if that's any less predictable, someone dying. I don't know if it's any more dramatic. Maybe if they both died.
And just all three of them lying dead at the bottom of that labyrinth. End of series.
Yeah, maybe. I think the main reason why they both survive is to have some sort of light at the end of the season. Because it's such a dark series.
Lightness wins.
And so that they can have that wins. Talk about yeah. light versus dark.
That no one could understand.
Yeah, for those that weren't able to make it out, I missed the first part. But the last line is after the talk about, because he has these makes up stories in the sky about light versus dark, the oldest story of all, and where Marty says, well, it looks like dark has more territory. Cole says, once there was only dark.
Looks like the light's winning. That's like, that's not a paraphrase. Yeah, we actually found that out after extensive internet research into what those lines were. A lot of websites didn't know.
I like that. Because
that was nice.
He's been such a pessimistic character this whole time.
Mm.
And you'd think all this brutal stuff is not really going to help him anyway. And having this sort of near-death thing where he sort of felt closer to his daughter but then taken away from his daughter, it's just such a dark place to be. But for him to come out of that with some sense of, even if it's the tiniest bit, even if the whole night sky is black, but there's just that teeny little star making that teeny bit of light, there's at least that little bit of hope at the end of the season.
Okay, better ending. I thought of one. Okay? Woody Harrelson going through that labyrinth comes through into the final chamber. The gardener is dead. On the floor. Matthew McConaughey standing over him. Turns out Matthew McConaughey was the killer all along. It was the tax man. He then kills Woody Harrelson.
I like that as sort of a twist ending. But I don't think they set up enough of that in the series for that to be true. I feel like you could go back and poke a lot of holes in that.
I guess since I didn't love the series as much as you, I just wanted something really exciting at the end. I just wanted something like that I could go to people, oh my gosh, have you seen the end of True Detective yet? That was mental. Well, one person who the gardener didn't cut the grass of was Woody Harrelson's wife. There's a big moment where Woody gets pretty angry at the tax man for mowing his lawn.
I think justifiably so.
The lawn mowing or...
the being angry at the lawn mowing.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of stuff between Marty and his wife. To be honest, I wasn't really that interested in it.
Yeah. No, I wasn't really. But let's pull back a bit here. Let's say you're married one day, okay? I don't want to jump the gun on anything. but let's say you're married one day. If I came around and mowed your lawn, would you be upset with me?
Yeah, obviously. You're going to get a beat down. Here's the thing, right? When people go, oh, if your partner has an affair or whatever,
yeah,
do you get mad at the person or do you get mad at your wife?
I think you get mad at both, is my view.
I think if the person is a complete stranger, they probably shouldn't be sleeping with someone that's married.
Yeah.
But they didn't really do anything directly. They have an indirect responsibility to you just as part of, like, a collective moral society that you shouldn't sleep with married people. But seeing as they don't know me, they don't have any direct responsibility to me.
You're not going
to
feel as angry to them, for sure.
You, as a close friend, have...
Wait, are we talking about an affair or are we talking about mowing the lawn? So I was definitely talking about mowing the lawn. I would, of course, never sleep with your wife.
Well, he does do that, and that's...
So you're saying it's a gateway. It's a gateway.
I think if we're being literal, okay, we're talking about the...
very clear.
Not sleeping with anyone, we're talking about mowing grass on someone's front yard.
Yeah, okay.
That in and of itself is not offensive. I might be like, that's a bit random. Why'd you do that? Oh, well, I mean, I guess now I don't have to do it.
Yeah.
To me, it's not like a thing. I guess for him, it could have been like a cathartic thing. Like, oh, he just got really excited to mow the lawn each week. Like, some people like their gardens and stuff. That's something that they do.
I guess also we're good mates, right? Like, you know, if one of us is married, the other one might come around, help out with things every now and then or whatever. But, it's not like they were good friends at this point. Like, it's sort of their colleagues. Like, it's not like he knew the wife very well. Like, he's sort of just around there for no reason.
Yeah, if things were rocky with my wife and you come around and I don't know you're going to be there.
My shirt's off.
Shirt's off. And then my wife talks about what a good guy you are, and then it makes me look bad that I didn't get around to mowing the lawn in time.
Yeah, if I'm making you look bad, because I'm a pretty good guy, so gotta be careful of that.
I don't think I'd get angry, but I'd probably just explain it. Well, actually, if I thought you were making a move, then I would be angry. If I didn't think you were making a move, but you were just inadvertently making me look bad, I'd be like, hey, man, you're inadvertently making me look bad.
And I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I'll stop doing that. Like, I think we'd deal with it a lot better than these guys. But I thought it was a hilarious scene because, like, cutting someone's grass is an actual saying. They were like...
Foreshadow.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, the lawn mowing incident aside, it gets worse. The tax man sleeps with Woody Harrelson's wife. Woody Harrelson doesn't take that well. It's a bit of a fight. It really does take them to the end of the series to patch things back up from that.
Yeah, sometimes I feel a bit bad saying, like, oh, I don't like family stuff. I don't like relationship stuff. Because it makes me, I don't know, does it make me feel like I don't have a heart? Like, and I always go, oh, these, you know, female characters, the wife characters, I don't really like them. Well, I don't think that's my fault. I don't think it's that I don't like female characters.
You're blaming the writers.
I think just the writers are not writing these females that well. That's why we love them when we get a great character like Daenerys in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't find that interesting. So basically, he's a butthole.
Oh, yeah.
she basically needs a way to get back at him. And if she just sleeps with some random, that kind of just makes them even. If anything, that'll just sort of assuage him of some guilt, because he's like, oh, now things are balanced.
And there is a murderer on the loose. No one is even meeting up with strange guys.
But if she sleeps with his partner, that's obviously going to...
It's a good move if you want to hurt him. It's a good move. Mission accomplished. Yeah, and it is referring he's had affairs with white women in this series.
Mm.
So he's a bit hypocritical. It's hard to be completely sympathetic for him.
Mm. I didn't really like that as a storyline, but an interesting line was when they talk about it many years later.
Mm.
Cole says to him that Cole is mad at Marty for being such a bad husband, pushing his wife so far away that she felt the need to use him in order to get back at Marty.
Yeah.
So it's Marty's fault for breaking up their partnership.
Yeah. Don't hate it when people are so bad to their partners that they make their partners sleep with you.
It was just a great example of that intellectualized way of thinking of things that would make sense in Cole's head, but would just infuriate Marty.
Yeah, and as stupid a point as it is on one level, there is a point to be made that there is blame to go around in that whole setup.
Yeah, very few people's hands are clean in this show. That's why I like just that teeny bit of hope at the end of the series. Okay,
maybe it was a good ending. Anyway, well, I've reached out to some people from my my class of 1999, and we've gotten a few responses back.
Well,
should I'll read some of them out. One's from James, and this James guy was, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, maybe a bit of a bad boy of the class. Like, nothing extreme, nothing. He was really
hardcore.
I liked him. He was cool. He had a catchphrase, "You're going down." I really liked James. He was a funny guy, good guy. And quite a thoughtful guy too, actually. But I'd say he's probably the bad boy of the class. Anyway, so here's what he said. Because I asked him about them. So look, maybe a suspect. I think he'd be a lot of people near the top, but I wasn't sure. Too obvious. I remember Mr. Bly, but nothing about stolen biscuits. They're probably expired by now. Have they reappeared?
What?
Ooh.
To me, that's a suspicious response, okay? Because he's been clever. Like, he can't just deny everything. Like, he has to say that he remembers Mr. Bly. So he's playing along as if he's giving you a little bit of information.
Yeah.
But of course, when it comes to the biscuits, no, don't remember that part of the story.
Yeah. Mm.
Then he tries to turn it around. He tries to make the interview about you. He's trying to see what you know. Have they reappeared?
Yeah. Okay, here's one from Philip, who is in my class. Stolen biscuits? Nah, can't say I do. Why? Did we steal his biscuits?
Okay. It's a very important comma.
Yeah.
That's gone, why? Did we steal his biscuits? Because I feel like, why did we steal his biscuits?
Yes.
He's admitting guilt in stealing the biscuits.
And you just
and you.
There is a just comma cannot after why.
The reason is there, why
there is
it.
A comma after why.
Hmm.
So he doesn't put it past himself.
He thinks this was a collective job.
Yeah, he thinks it was a team effort, and he thinks if it was, he was a part of it. Might because I'm asking him about it, he thinks we're in it. But anyway.
Okay.
Okay, Gene. Going to Gene. He was vice captain of the primary school at the time.
Well, so this goes all the way to the top.
Yeah, well.
Nearly.
Second top. Message the school captain, haven't heard back from you yet. Or the primary captain. Okay, here we go. He goes, it was Tim. It was Tim. He it thinks it's Tim. Tim.
Who's Tim?
He's a guy in our class. So I emailed Tim. Okay. Oh, I better, read his reply.
He just came out. It's Tim. Okay, what does Tim have to say for himself? Tim.
I've gotten a lot of emails today. Obviously, very important person. Okay, here we go. In response to the biscuits... Not that I can recall now, how did this question come up?
So Tim's denying it.
Yeah, but a little sort of, I can't recall, Like, this is what they do where, like, this was sort of the move with those depositions in House of Cards and George W. Bush's legal teams. It was always, I don't recall. That's what they'd say after everything. I don't remember that happening, not to my recollection. This, I think, is a bit of a hot case. I then got back to him, because he asked how it came up. So I then got back to him, trying to solve a cold case about Mr. Bligh's missing biscuits. Someone threw out your name as a suspect, so just following the lead. So I turned the heat up. He has not replied to that message yet. I think that could be pretty...
I want to know more about why Gene thinks it's Tim. So he's thrown Tim's name out there.
Yeah.
He's your only witness.
Well, I have asked Gene if we can give him a call. He saw that message at 6:31, 20 minutes ago. He has not replied. I don't think we can solve this case in one podcast. I just don't think we've got the time. Oh, I should have said cookies, because in America, like, biscuits like a scone or something.
But not sweet.
Yeah. No, these were probably cookies or whatever. I never saw them. I don't know, though. So
a cliffhanger.
Yeah, we can't solve
ending
this now. We cannot
solve
it.
Episode one of the great... cookie mystery.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we pick this up next episode? Do we wait to the next thing we review that's a mystery? Do we wait until next season of True Detective to pick up the case? I don't know.
I say we try and solve this.
We could do I could maybe try to line up people to call, and we could just do a podcast on the cookie mystery. We'll see. We'll talk about
this.
We're
going to try and solve
this. We'll have a meeting. We've got to get to the
bottom of
this.
We'll definitely be following this up over housekeeping, and if it really, the plot really thickens, we could get a cookie mystery podcast.
Oh, my.
Okay. So
I would love to close this case.
If you have any information on the cookie mystery, head to facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast, like the page,
yeah,
and hit us up with a message. Any clues, anything at all, any info, will be very much rewarded by us on the podcast.
I think we just need to work through everyone in that class and knock them out one at a time.
We're not eliminating anybody.
No.
Even Matt is still a suspect in my eyes.
I actually appreciate that, because that means you're on the ball. Like, I think you shouldn't be ruling. If you were ruling me out, I'd be going, what are you doing? Like, okay, this is great. That's our True Detective podcast.
That's the podcast. Coming up, we've got Monuments Men, we've got Girls, hopefully a resolution to the cookie mystery, a whole bunch of stuff to be looking forward to on the Screen Verdict podcast.
Yes.
Get excited, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, see ya. Bye.